Now from the KSFR newsroom, At Noon looks at the top local news headlines for this Friday, August 16th. Governor Martinez has announced that she plans to dedicate $1.5 million in capital outlay funding for river restoration efforts in New Mexico. The governor says she will seek to leverage those state funds to secure federal and local partner contributions of as much as $2.6 million in additional funding for what's being called the River Stewards Initiative. It will clear vegetation in river areas, lower river bank lines, replant native species vegetation, and install erosion control measures. The National Education Association Santa Fe, the union for Santa Fe public school teachers, has, as expected, given its approval to a 1.5% pay raise. That's a 0.5% more than the 1% increase approved by lawmakers during the legislative session. If approved next week by the school board, it would be the highest average salary increase in New Mexico. The Santa Fe Public School District remains one of the state's lowest funded on a per-student basis. That teenage boy from Albuquerque's South Valley, charged as an adult with 5 counts of murder in the shooting deaths of his parents and 3 siblings, may plead insanity. Attorneys for 15-year-old Nehemiah Griego filed a motion Thursday for that possibility, pending a mental competency evaluation. The shootings occurred back in January, and it was reported at the time that the boy texted a picture of his dead mother to his 12-year-old girlfriend and had also planned to go to a local Walmart and randomly shoot at others. Attorney General Gary King has today said that the real cause of death for prominent Albuquerque attorney Mary Hahn may never be known due to a flawed police investigation and inappropriate directions from high-ranking Duke City officials. On November 18, 2010, Hahn was discovered in the front seat of her garaged BMW, in what was then said to be suicide by carbon monoxide poisoning. That assertion has been debated for some time, and Attorney General King considers the death of Mary Hahn to be an open, ongoing investigation. He's inviting anyone who has not previously stepped forward with information to contact his office. Santa Fe's 92nd Annual Indian Market moves into high gear today with award-winning artists to be named at a Southwestern Association for Indian Arts luncheon. On the plaza tomorrow and Sunday, more than 80,000 people are expected to view and buy works by participating artists. The market is said to generate over $100 million for the state and region. For those planning to attend, the City of Santa Fe Parking Division advises that they'll be collecting $10 up front for parking all day at public parking lots downtown. For those willing to park somewhat farther away, the rail yard garage is available for $5. The Santa Fe pickup shuttle route has also been amended to accommodate street closures for the event. U.S. Senator Martin Heinrich has launched an online office he says will give constituents a convenient way to share their concerns on key issues and also make requests for assistance. The new website allows users to access live webcasts of committee hearings, news releases, videos, and track legislation. The site is optimized for use on all computers and mobile devices, including tablets and smartphones, and can be translated into Spanish with the click of a button. The site can be found at heinrich.senate.gov. It's been 1 year since Santa Fe Community College President Anna Cha Guzman took her post, and next week the school's governing board will conduct a performance review evaluation. At a Thursday State of the College address, Guzman cited some of her accomplishments, which include an uptick in both student enrollment and achievement. Critics have pointed out that a number of teachers and staff have opted to take early retirement since Guzman took over. More in today's New Mexican. Santa Fe's iconic and award-winning hamburger joint, the Bobcat Bite, has reopened at a new downtown location, reincarnated as the Santa Fe Bite. The business's owners, Bonnie and John Ecker, left their old location along Old Las Vegas Highway a couple of months ago after a dispute with the property's owner. The new establishment is at Garrett's Desert Inn on Old Santa Fe Trail. Today's Journal Santa Fe says the space is 4 times the size of the original. Weather for Santa Fe? Today and through the weekend, look for mostly sunny skies, highs in the mid-80s, and a 10 to 20% chance for late-day showers. Looking ahead, the forecast for next week calls for cooler daytime highs in the upper 70s and an increasing chance for precipitation. Meanwhile, the current Santa Fe temperature now 82 degrees. This is Dan Garrity for KSFR News. At Noon will continue in just a moment.
Voy caminando, voy arrollando, y con mi conga voy acabando.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by the Santa Fe Chamber Music Festival, bringing Grammy Award-nominated Tiempo Libre back to the Leipzig Performing Arts Center on Friday night, August 16th, with their signature mix of Latin jazz and Cuban timba rhythms. Tickets and information available at 982-1890, santafechambermusic.com, and at the door. Tiempo Libre, 8 p.m. Friday night, August 16th at the Leipzig.
And at noon on KSFR, now segues to today's feature stories. A federal civil rights complaint has been filed against the New Mexico Department of Workforce Solutions, claiming access to the department is discriminatory. Maria Martinez Sanchez is a staff attorney with the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty who filed the complaint. Maria, tell us what issues led to your filing.
For the past several years, we've been noticing significant barriers to certain individuals at the Department of Workforce Solutions to accessing benefits, in particular people who do not speak English. And we have tried addressing these problems with the department over the course of several years to improve their language access services. They have not. You know, we've tried letters, we've tried meetings, we've tried phone calls, and we've always just come across an attitude that it's not going to change. And we've warned them that we were going to take action. And so finally, you know, it was kind of like a last resort. We didn't take this decision lightly, but we decided that if they were not willing to work with us to improve their language access and other components of their services, that we needed to file this complaint with the United States DOL, Department of Labor.
Did the department's move to an online system have an impact?
Yes, it definitely has. Before the new online system came into effect, people who did not speak English, people with disabilities, older people could easily apply by phone. And now the message that the department sends, even though they seem to be saying that there are alternatives to the online system, but the message they send loud and clear to the public is that you must apply online. If you go onto the website, every indication is that there's no other alternative except to apply online. So unless you know somebody from the Department of Workforce Solutions at the higher, in the higher echelons, because actually the staff of Department of Workforce Solutions in the field offices also say that you have to apply online, then there's no way anyone would know. So before the online system, people were able to call in and do their applications if they weren't able to use a computer or they didn't speak English.
Has Workforce Solutions given you any explanation for why these problems are ongoing?
There's no official reason, but we believe it has a lot to do with saving money.
And what happens to your complaint now?
The complaint is in the hands of the U.S. Department of Labor, which provides a significant amount of funding to the Department of Workforce Solutions. I think it's above 90% of their funding comes from the United States government. So because of that, the state agency is obligated to comply with Title VI of the Civil Rights Act, which is the federal law that says you can't discriminate against people based on national origin, based on race, gender, age. So that complaint is now in their hands. I believe what happens is they come in and they do an investigation. They make recommendations to the department. And they do have the ability to withhold funds from a state agency if that agency is not complying with the law.
We mentioned people perhaps not familiar with computers. Is there any sort of law that protects them specifically, such as exists for other, say, disabilities?
Just the fact of being computer illiterate, that group of people is not a protected class per se. So the protected classes are race, national origin, gender, age, and I'm not sure if sexual orientation, but I imagine it is as well. But many people with very low education levels also tend to be people of foreign national origin. And then oftentimes people with disabilities, they might not have low education levels, but they're not able to use a computer for a variety of reasons. So if you fall into one of those classes and also are computer illiterate, then you're protected by the law.
What do you expect the outcome from this complaint to be?
Well, we hope that the department, that we can continue, that we can work with the department to change, to improve the way they are serving New Mexicans. We hope that the online application will be translated into Spanish, that people can go online and just apply online. Because if they do have this alternative of calling in, that call really isn't a reasonable alternative, because we've heard from numbers of people that when they call in, they have to wait for hours. If you're a victim of wage theft, you can go into the department, fill out a wage and hour claim, and have the labor relations department, the labor relations division, investigate your claim and eventually get you paid. That whole system is completely unavailable to people that don't speak English if they don't have an advocate or a family member or somebody that can help them fill out that application, because it's strictly in English. So we would like all of that to be translated as well. We would like to see the website in Spanish, and not just with a Google translator, but with, you know, an actual Spanish that has been translated by a certified translator. We would like to see all correspondence that comes out of the agency, if the person is a non-English speaker, being in that person's language. We know you can't do every single language in the world. That's not economically feasible. Definitely Spanish, since over a third of population in New Mexico speaks a language other than English at home, and most of those people are Spanish speakers. We think all of the correspondence should be in English and Spanish. And for those other languages where it might not be economically feasible to have those letters and all the correspondence to be in those languages, there should be a notice at the bottom of the of every single piece of paper that comes out of the department saying you have a right to understand this correspondence in your language, and to call a certain number to get it translated.
And Maria, where can people get more information on this topic?
We have a website. It is www.nmpovertylaw.org. And they can also call me, Maria Martinez Sanchez, at 505-255-2840 with any questions.
Maria Martinez Sanchez with the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty. Many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR.
Jim Hightower returns to Santa Fe on August 24th in a benefit for KSFR. Join us on Saturday the 24th for a talk and reception at Museum Hill Cafe starting at 5:30. Tickets are $35 and proceeds benefit the station. To reserve your seat, visit us online at ksfr.org or call 428-1527. That's 428-1527 for an evening with Jim Hightower on August 24th at the Museum Hill Cafe. And you can now catch Hightower's commentaries on KSFR weekday afternoons right before Democracy Now!
17 minutes past the hour here in the KSFR newsroom as At Noon continues. As the Southwest has continued to suffer severe drought conditions, residents are being asked to work diligently to conserve water. There is some good news on that front out of Santa Fe. Lori Treviso is the water conservation manager for our city. Lori, share with us the good news.
Yes, you can tell that from our consumption data that our residents know how to conserve water. Since, let's see, about June 24th, our consumption has gone down by 1 million gallons a day until about this week, which was it hovered around 11.5 million gallons a day. So what that means for us is starting June 24th, we were about 14.5 million gallons per day. We went down the week of July 1st to 13.5 million gallons a day. July 8th, 12.3 million gallons per day, continually down again the week of July 15th, 11.5 million gallons a day, and then July 22nd, 10.3 million gallons per day. And we've hovered around that low mark here throughout August, and I'm really proud and impressed with the way that our customers have responded to the recent rains that we've gotten and the cooler temperatures, and they know to turn their irrigation systems off. They know not to water during the peak day. They know not to water when we get a lot of rain, and I'm really impressed, and the numbers show it.
In addition to the steps you've already mentioned, what else are Santa Feans doing to help conserve?
Well, recently we've had an uptick in our rebate programs. We have a series of rebate programs which are geared towards really high incentives for our customers. We credit your water bill for replacing high-efficiency toilets, and that's 1.28 gallons per flush or less. We give you a credit on your water bill as well for replacing older clothes washers for newer, more high-efficient clothes washers. And then recently, because of the rains, we've had an increase in our rain barrel and cistern or rainwater harvesting rebate as well.
How do this year's numbers compare to last year?
A year ago, it was still pretty hot and it was still pretty dry. And let's see, in 2012, we were at 14.4 million gallons for this week in August last year. So right now, again, like I said, we're hovering around that 10.5 to 11 million gallon per day amount. So we're talking about 3 and 4 million gallons difference, and that's a huge difference for our community. We were a lot hotter, we were a lot drier, and we weren't as lucky to get some of the precipitation that we did, but I think that there's a big difference in 14.5 versus 11.5 million gallons.
You've mentioned what we've been doing right. Now, what do we need to improve on as far as water conservation is concerned?
Well, I think the better is there's always room for improvement, and you have to look at your everyday day-to-day activities. And I think just keeping it on the small scale, when you look at it the citywide, or I'm part of a large community, it gets kind of overwhelming. But there are small things that each individual can do. And one of the main ones is finding and fixing leaks. It's not a priority for people. You know, you see something leaking and you really don't, yeah, I'll do that next week, I'll do that later, I'll do that. You procrastinate on those things. But those things add up. And, you know, leaks are the silent water use, I guess you could say.
Where can people go for more information?
We have a new website, and it's SaveWaterSantaFe.com, and that's all one word, SaveWaterSantaFe.com. You can find information about our rebate program. You can find information about how we manage and plan for drought. You can find information about our children's programs, the water use in the city, the reservoir levels. You can find information, some tips about finding and fixing leaks, those kinds of things, what businesses can do. When you go into restrooms here in public places here in Santa Fe, you see our signage all over, and we give that away for free. You just call us and ask, and we'll be happy to. We've hand-delivered them in some cases. We'll mail them out, whatever we can do to get the message out. So you can go to our website. You can give us a call as well. That's 955-4225. And that's our main line, so someone will pick up on that line, and we're here to answer your questions.
Lori, anything you'd like to add?
I think that the main thing I would like to touch on, I guess, or in closing, is that we're still in a drought. It's still, even though we were getting rain, and even though it's nice and cool, when you look on the U.S. Drought Monitor, then you can see our state here in New Mexico, there's still a large portion of it that's in extreme drought. So the rains are helping, but we still need to do our part.
Lori Treviso, Water Conservation Manager for the City of Santa Fe. Many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by the Pueblo of Tesuque Flea Market, the flea for over 20 years, hosting local and international vendors dealing in everything from handcrafted imports and old pawn jewelry to specialty foods and garage sale finds. Located at 15 Flea Market Road in Santa Fe, right next to the Opera, the Tesuque Flea is open 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from March through December. For more info, email seetheflea@yahoo.com or visit online at tesuquefleamarket.com.
23 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. Allegations of Medicaid fraud by some mental health care providers has led to suspension of payments to those organizations, leading to a concern about how New Mexicans in need can get decent, continuous mental health care. Now, five of our congressional delegation have asked the federal government to intervene. Here's KSFR News reporter Charles Maynard to file the report.
Recent allegations of Medicaid fraud involving 15 New Mexico mental health services have led to the freezing of payments for those providers. Now, New Mexico Senators Martin Heinrich and Tom Udall, along with Representatives Michelle Lujan Grisham and Ben Ray Lujan, have come forward to ask the federal government for a public discussion of the issue. Mr. Lujan explains.
Yes, so myself, Michelle, and Senator Udall and Senator Heinrich had communicated to CMS and Secretary Sebelius asking that they come to New Mexico to hold some stakeholder meetings and conversations with the community to be able to hear from them, because we've been hearing from constituents and from many of those that are impacted from the break in providing care to them and to their family members and those that even some of the professional staff had cared for, that what was being reported wasn't what they were being told, and that they were extremely concerned that there was not going to be a continuity of care. And so we reached out to the Secretary, Sebelius, and to CMS and requested that they come to New Mexico as soon as possible to begin these meetings.
At the moment, it appears that no formal charges have been filed against these mental health service providers.
That's my understanding as well with what's being reported. And most of what we have learned is what the media has been able to report. And even there, you think that there needs to be more transparency and responding to some of these questions that have been posed, so that way everyone understands what's happening. This investigation shouldn't be done in a veil of secrecy. But, you know, in the end, I don't think anyone's saying that if there is concerns of fraud, that we should not do all that we can to be able to identify them. But we should also keep in mind that the importance of that continuity of care is, especially in mental and behavioral health, the importance of making sure that those patients and clients continue to receive the support that they need and the care that they need is critically important.
He's hopeful the meeting will be fruitful and lead to some resolution.
As we said, we asked CMS to come to New Mexico and wanted to receive confirmation that the state's not in jeopardy of losing funding, that we also want CMS to communicate to the state concerning the questions with discretion and flexibility, and also that with in the letter directly that we're asking for them to come to the state to hear from the constituents so those that are impacted can speak directly to CMS and make sure that that information is being communicated. And I can report to you that we received the word late last night that CMS did respond to myself, Michelle, Senator Udall, Senator Heinrich, and did say that they would be coming to New Mexico sooner rather than later, although they did not give us a date. And once we receive that information, we'll make sure we report that to the public immediately.
At this point, there appears to be no legislative action that can take place to help ease this problem.
In this case, this is one of the instances where the state has most, if not all, of the discretion pertaining to programs like this. And so that's why we're asking CMS from an oversight perspective to do whatever it is that they're still able to do to make sure that we're getting answers to questions and addressing some of the constituents' concerns who have stated to us and shared, you know, how anxious they are or fearful and confused about what to expect. They've had appointments delayed or canceled or changes in providers themselves who they've had relationships with and built trust over the years. You know, some of those caseworkers and professionals even told us that clients went to them who have concerns with even suicide and told their caseworkers, what are we going to do now? And just terrified. You know, some of these caseworkers who have been doing this for years came to us in tears as well, advocating for their clients. And so it's a tough spot, but that's why the delegation wanted to do everything we could to encourage more oversight and more transparency, but especially emphasize the continuity of care with all of this as well.
Congressman Ben Ray Lujan from New Mexico's 3rd Congressional District.
I think that everybody in the community, everyone in the state, deserves to know all that they possibly can on this. And again, the press and the media have been the ones that have been pushing the responses that we've been able to get thus far. And just thank you for continuing to encourage more transparency with us.
For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
Support for KSFR comes from Upaya Zen Center, a Zen Buddhist practice training and service center for engaged Buddhism. Upaya is open to the community for daily meditation sits, Wednesday night Dharma talks, and outstanding trainings and retreats. September 20th to 22nd, Edo Francis Carney and Shinzon Palma present Wisdom Teachings of Ryokan, the Spiritual Dynamics of Simplicity. To learn more, call 986-8518 or visit upaya.org. That's upaya.org.
And taking a look now at some financial news at midday, the rate of new U.S. home building rose in July, spurred on by a rise in the construction of new apartments. The Commerce Department said new home construction climbed by 5.9% from the previous month. The annual rate was 896,000 new homes, below a recent peak of just over 1 million reported in March. The rate of new single-family houses being built dropped by 2.2%, a sign that builders could be worried about rising mortgage rates. Permits to build new homes rose 2.7% but did miss analysts' expectations. The rate for a 30-year mortgage was 4.4% in July, a full percentage point higher than it had been in May, before the U.S. Federal Reserve started hinting that it might begin to slow down its efforts to prop up the U.S. economy. And taking a look at the big board on Wall Street at midday, the Dow up 8 points at 15,120, the NASDAQ up 13 at 3,619, and the S&P 500 up just less than 1 point. It stands at 1,662. 12:30 here in the KSFR newsroom, the bottom of the hour is the perfect opportunity to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
I was not living in New Mexico when it happened. I've only been here for 10 years, which makes me an NMNB, New Mexico newborn. But I certainly read and watched the news about the infamous and horrific prison riot here in 1980, when 33 inmates were killed and scores others along with guards were injured. Now, there's preliminary talk about turning the old prison into a tourist destination, with tours, bookstore, and gift shop. Look, Mommy, I got a postcard that has a photo of the burn marks on the concrete where inmates tortured and burned snitches with a blowtorch. What's ironic about the prison riot is us vacation spot is that the state turned down using the old prison for a movie based on the acclaimed book The Devil's Butcher Shop, The New Mexico Prison Uprising. Compared to a tourist stop, bookstore, and gift shop, a movie would be more arresting, proving the pen is indeed mightier than the gift shop. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
And with that, we'll conclude today's edition of At Noon, KSFR's extended noon news hour. Dan Garrity with you here at the news desk, with thanks to my contributing colleague today, Charles Maynard. And we will start fresh for you on Monday with more news of and for New Mexico. And as always, we hope you join us.